Okay, good Erev Shabbos to everybody. And I'm not giving the shiur in person today, but I decided to record some messages from Rav Soloveitchik on the Parsha so that people can have some enjoyment and chizuk and inspiration in Talmud Torah on this very unique Erev Shabbos. And I think some of the messages will resonate with the current matzav that we find ourselves in, dealing with the pandemic coronavirus. The pasuk, the parsha begins by talking about the machzis ha-shekel, the half a shekel that each person of the Klal Yisrael had to give. Kisisas rosh bnei Yisrael v'kodem, when you count the Jewish people, nasnu ish kofer nafsho la Hashem if kodosam. Everyone has to give a half shekel to redeem his soul from Hashem. Rav Soloveitchik comments on the fascinating notion that you could actually pay money to redeem yourself when you sin. Kofer nafsho, the person buys himself back from Hashem. You have to redeem yourself from Hashem. The entire world, he says, is hektish. The only legal means by which we are allowed to use hektish is through redeeming it. The halachic means to redeem an object is a trade. You exchange the kodesh item with a non-hektish item. One's body, one's clothing, one's children, the entire universe require redemption to allow us to make use of them. Yet, what can man possibly offer in trade that could affect such a redemption? The entire world belongs to Hashem. So, David HaMelech, in a moment of resignation upon reflecting on this paradox, writes in Tehillim, Perek Mem Tes Pasuk Ches, Ach lo yifte, lo pado yifte ish, lo yitein lelo kim kafro. You can't redeem yourself. What are you going to give to Hashem to pay for what you're worth to be able to use your own life? Yet, he says, many Jews have a tradition of reciting Kaparis on Erev Yom Kippur, where we quote a different pasuk, and where Hashem says, Pida'ehu meredes shachas matzasi kofer. I have redeemed him from descending into the pit. I have his redemption, ransom. Indeed, when Hashem's midas hadin is evident, so the pasuk in Tehillim is correct. There is no redemption. But when Hashem's midas harachamim is around, so then the verse from Iov, Pida'ehu meredes shachas, Hashem says he accepts our redemption in the rachamim. Redemption is possible. Rav Soloveitchik writes so beautifully, symbolically, what does man donate to God? What does man pay God back to redeem himself? We pay Hashem, Rav Soloveitchik said, in three ways. Three very important, very striking ways. First of all, this is a theme that Rav Soloveitchik has developed many, many times over the last couple of weeks. This idea of tzimtzum. Rav Soloveitchik says, Hashem had to constrict himself and contract himself in order to allow the existence of the world. Hashem fills everywhere. He doesn't end. But he constricted himself, he contracted himself, he made himself small in order to allow the world to exist. So we have to imitate Hashem, so we also have to make ourselves small. We also have to hold ourselves back. Man harbors illusions of greatness, thinking his abilities are limitless, he could attain infinity. The first redemption coin that Hashem exacts from us, what we have to pay, is our own contraction. Man expresses tzimtzum first and foremost by observing the precepts of the halacha. No one forces us to keep the halacha. There's no police, no executive branch of government, no jails, no punishment for violators. By following halacha, by staying away from that which we're not allowed to do, and doing what we are obligated to do, despite the lack of an external enforcement, we engage in tzimtzum. That's the first thing we pay Hashem with. We observe halacha. The next attribute of Hashem that we must imitate, the second redemption coin to redeem our worldly life, is Hester Ne'elam, the attribute of obscurity. Hashem not only contracted himself to allow the world to be created, Hashem hides himself. He does not act demonstrably, nor does Hashem seek recognition. Man is naturally inclined to strive for recognition, for honor. Man wishes his efforts and actions to be appreciated by as many of his peers and with as much fanfare as possible. Yet the greatest individuals in Jewish history reflect precisely the opposite tendency, a predisposition towards obscurity. Take as one example an august institution from thousands of years ago, the 120-member Anshei Knesset HaGdola. This group of rabbis preserved Klal Yisrael through the first exile. The Anshei Knesset HaGdola instituted the form of prayer that we use today, as well as the standard formula for brachos. They instituted the laws of muktzah and other derabbanans to guard the Shabbos. Their impact on our everyday lives is immeasurable. Who exactly were the representatives of this noble body? How many of its members are identifiable by name? Ezra, Nehemiah, Mordechai, Zerubbabel, and Shimon HaTzadik. Those are all that we know. The Gemara says there were a bunch of Nevi'im. Who were they? We don't know. Why didn't they include their names in the oral law of the Torah Shebaal Peh through which they made their greatest impact? Because they reflected the obscurity of Hashem himself as he hid behind a cloud on Har Sinai. If the master of the universe hides from the very world that he leads, so too must the masters of our tradition, the Chachmei HaMesorah, the Tzadikim, the Talmidei Chacham, they are supposed to hide. That's another very important midah, the midah of tznius, of not wanting recognition. That's the other coin that we redeem ourselves by paying Hashem. And finally, the third redemption coin that a person must pay in order to make use of this world is elame, voiceless, mute, passive acceptance. Although Hashem occasionally reveals himself in a dramatic fashion, Hashem thunders, more often he is mute and passive. This tendency towards silence is also reflected in his being slow to anger. Despite the actions of man that should provoke an angry response, Hashem is long-suffering with silent acceptance of our foibles. A Jew regularly recites a bracha upon eating and satisfying his hunger. All is well. He is healthy and in possession of his faculties. One can readily sense the presence of Hashem. In cruel contrast, upon the tragic death of a mother, father, son, daughter, or spouse, as he rips his clothing at the moment of his greatest grief, a Jew recites the bracha, Dayan HaEmes. A person prepares the body for burial, places it in the ground, shovels earth on top of the casket. As everything that means anything to him lies lifeless before him in this grave, he recites the bracha as he silently shouts, where is the Ata? Where is Hashem's presence? At the moment that he is most tormented by this question, he responds with Kaddish, affirming that the world is Hashem's and that everything that takes place in it is a reflection of his will. Unanswerable, unexplained tragedies have accompanied the Jew in his long history. When faced with death, when a Jew is confronted with the ultimate teku, unanswerable question, he recites the bracha of Dayan HaEmes. Emotional sublimation is the greatest act of redemption that a Jew can pay HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's number three. We pay Hashem, said Rav Soloveitchik, with three things. Number one, we observe halacha. Number two, we don't look for recognition. Number three, even when challenging and difficult and bad things that cause us to add questions happen, we accept them as Hashem's will. And I would suggest that's the same thing with the current difficult situation that we find ourselves in. We don't understand, but we accept them as Hashem's will. We say a baruch Dayan HaEmes, Hashem is absolutely truthful and just. Whatever he does is absolutely truthful and just, so we have to accept it. Just like we have to accept death when it happens and say, Baruch Dayan HaEmes, blesses you Hashem who knows the real score. So too when tragedy or illness or things come across a Jew, we have to also make a bracha and accept it. Let's continue. The whole idea of the Machtzis HaShekel, on the one hand, maybe it's just to purchase karbanos, that's what it's used for. On the other hand, maybe all of Klal Yisrael has to just become a giving people. Rashi seems to imply it's more about the karbanos, but the Rambam says it's really about becoming someone who's giving. One can learn two new ideas from this halacha, says Rav Soloveitchik. First, the mitzvah of giving the Machtzis HaShekel includes a mitzvah of tzedakah. Even though we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, it still applies nowadays. We do Zeichel HaMachzis HaShekel, we just did it. The mitzvah of giving the half shekel still applies in regard to the obligation to give tzedakah. Second, like the mitzvah of the Machzis HaShekel, the mitzvah of tzedakah on its most fundamental level involves an act of giving, even if the needy are not helped through the act. The Shulchan Aruch says, even poor people have an obligation to give tzedakah to each other, even though neither ultimately gains anything. I give you tzedakah, you give me tzedakah. Well, what's the point? Why do I have to give? The idea is the point of tzedakah in the Machtzis HaShekel is to become a giving person. While there is indeed an added fulfillment in helping the needy, in helping people who need it, The basic mitzvah is the simple act of giving. That we should become giving people. We have to give. We have to learn how to give to others, how to part with our own money. That's what he says is the main theme, according to the Rambam, of the Machzor HaShekel. Even the poor, v'hadal lo yamit, even the poor have to give Machzor HaShekel. There is a general rule that no mitzvah requires one to expend more than a fifth of your assets. So, for example, if a lulav were to cost more than one-fifth of your money, you'd be exempt. The mitzvah of half shekel is an exemption. The Rambam says a person must literally sell the shirt off his back to fulfill Machzor HaShekel. The reason is found later in this very same pasuk. It's a kapara l'nafsho seichem. Without it, the atonement, the kapara, would not take place. And for matters of the soul, there is no monetary limitation. The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis, relates the famous story of Hillel, who used to earn half a dinar a day, yet he paid a quarter dinar daily to gain entry into the Beis Medrash. Why did Hillel give half of his salary to study Torah when his obligation was only one-tenth of a dinar? Because he only had to give a fifth. If he earned a half a dinar, so he only had to give a fifth for the mitzvah. So why did he pay 50% of his parnasa to Talmud Torah? He only obligated to give a fifth. The Chavetz Chaim indicates that the study of Torah is yet another exception to the 20% expense limitation. Since kihem chayenu v'orach yameinu, kihu chayach v'orach yamecha, pasuk says in Devarim Perek Lamed pasuk Chaf, the study of Torah brings life to the soul, and therefore, similar to the half shekel, which is a kapara on your soul, and therefore the 20% limit doesn't account, there is no monetary limitation to the expenditure for the study of Torah. The study of Torah is what sustains a Jew, keeps a Jew going. Kihim chayinu v'orach yameinu. This is our life. L'chaper al nafsho seichem, continues Rav Soloveitchik. Sin is a result of selfishness, when temptation overrules sacred principles. One abandons tradition and goes to sin because of the pleasure one expects to derive from the performance of the forbidden deed. Tzedakah, in contrast, demonstrates sympathy, compassion, and sharing with others. For this reason, says Rav Soloveitchik, forgiveness for sin, kapara al nafsho seichem, can only be attained through tzedakah. Tzedakah also acts as a ransom. In order to redeem himself, the sinner must pay a ransom. The Torah therefore describes the half shekel as a redemption payment for the soul. Says Rav Soloveitchik, the goal of tzedakah, one of the goals, we said before, to be a giving person, it's also to redeem yourself from sin, because a sinner only cares about himself. That's why he does the sin over what Hashem wants. So tzedakah teaches him, care about others, put other people before yourself. That's why it serves as a kapara. Beautiful. Let's continue. Oh, there's a lot about Shabbos in Parshas Kisisa. A lot about Shabbos. Let's learn a little bit about Shabbos. Ushmartem es haShabbos, where am I now? I'm in Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yudalet. Ushmartem es haShabbos ki kodesh hi lochem. You shall observe the Shabbos, guard it because it's holy. It is holiness to you. The word kodesh is a noun. It's not an adjective. This phrase should not be translated, and you shall guard the Shabbos because the Shabbos is holy. Rather, you shall guard the Shabbos because it is holiness to you. It's the whole source of holiness of the Jewish people. So understands of Soloveitchik. Shabbos is the source of holiness of the Jewish people. There is an equation between Shabbos and sanctity. The Shabbos is a source of holiness. There is therefore a commonality between Shabbos and Migdash. There exists both a holy sanctuary in space and a holy sanctuary in time. Of the two imperatives, Migdash and Shabbos, Shabbos is clearly more significant than Migdash. Otherwise, one would have been ordered to violate Shabbos for the construction of the Mishkan. Shabbos as a sanctuary is more significant than the Mishkan as a sanctuary. The Beis HaMikdash is not indispensable for the survival of the people. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash now, but we still have the people. But the Jew cannot survive without the Shabbos. The Alkot Shimoni suggests there are three Hekdeshim on this world: Hashem's name, Shabbos, and the people of Israel. Yet we know of many other Hekdeshim, the land of Israel and the Beis HaMikdash, among others. In fact, however, all other sanctifications, the land of Israel and the Beis HaMikdash, derive their Kedusha from the first three. The land of Israel and the Beis HaMikdash were sanctified by the people of Israel. In contrast, the sanctification of Shabbos preceded the sanctification of Klal Yisrael. It was Hashem who sanctified the Shabbos, and in turn, it is the Shabbos that sanctifies the Jewish people. Thus, the words of the Friday night Shmoneh Esrei begin. Ata kidashta es yom hashvi l'shimcha. It was Hashem who sanctified the Shabbos. In the morning Shmoneh Esrei, the words of Shnei Luchos Avanim Horid Biyado, V'chasav Bahem Shmiras Shabbos, those words signify that the sanctification of the Jewish people was realized through giving them the Shabbos. Unbelievable. Shabbos is what sanctifies Jewish people. That's why the Medrash says that Sunday has a benzug of Monday, Tuesday has a benzug of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But who is Shabbos benzug? It's Klal Yisrael, the Shabbos benzug. What does it mean that Shabbos sanctifies us? Shabbos is what gives us our emunah. Shabbos tells us that Hashem created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh day, that everything that happens in this world comes from Hashem. That's the whole idea of Shabbos. That's why Shabbos sanctifies Jewish people. Shabbos was around before the Jewish people were around. Adam Arishon was around, but Klal Yisrael wasn't around. Shabbos is what sanctified the Jewish people. That's why Shabbos was given in Mara before the Torah, because Shabbos sanctified the Jewish people before and gave us our Kedusha, gave us our Emunah. And similarly continues, V'shamrei Yisrael Shabbos Lasa Shabbos Arusam B'Salam. Aseres HaDibros mentioned that the Shabbos is testimony that Hashem is creator of the universe. In keeping with this universal theme, the Pasuk in Aseres HaDibros dealing with the Shabbos does not refer to the day as presented specifically to Klal Yisrael. However, the Medrash teaches that after Hashem had offered these commandments to the other nations, and each of the nations in turn rejected them, then Shabbos became Klal Yisrael's possession exclusively, a covenant between Hashem and the Jewish people alone, more along the same lines. Rav Salvechik contrasts the sin of Adam and Chava with the sin of the Chet HaEgel, the Egel Azav. We read in this week's parasha about the Egel Azav. So Salvechik contrasts the two. Two more pieces, and then we're going to call it a day for Friday. What does the pasuk say? Aselanu elo him asher yelchu lufaneinu ki zeh Moshe ha'ir asher alonu me'eretz Yisrael lo yadanu mehayelo. Make us a god, the people say to Moshe, because Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't know what happened to him. Says the Salvechik, Adam and Chava's sin and the sin of the Egel Azav were due to fundamentally different psychological motivations. In partaking of the Eitz Hadas, Adam and Chava wanted to compete with God. The snake argued, on the day you eat from that tree, you're going to become like God. It's a pasuk says. An awareness of man's greatness is what led them to sin. Man wants to be great, wants to be like God. On the other hand, the sin of the Egel Azav was a consequence of man's self-negation. The people sinned because they were perplexed. Moshe was gone. They were confused. They did not know when Moshe would return, and they felt they had no approach to Hashem without him. They did not understand that Hashem's promise to take them into Eretz Yisrael could have been fulfilled even without Moshe. Here, sin results not out of arrogance, but out of a perceived inadequacy. These are two opposite forces in man that cause a person to sin. Sometimes he's usually a balgaiva. I want to do what I want to do. I want to eat what I want to eat. I want to look at what I want to look at. I want to take vacations when I want to take vacations. I want to do what I want to do. That's one sin that comes out of arrogance. But sometimes there's a sin that comes out of humility, that comes out of saying, this is not for me. I'm not good enough to be someone who studies Torah. I'm not good enough to be somebody who goes to Minyan. I'm not good enough to be somebody who takes leadership roles in my community. So those are sins that are not out of arrogance, but out of a perceived inadequacy. We have to step up. As Jews, sometimes we're required to be strong-willed, to be able to be strong in the face of people who may make fun of us. And finally, we'll do one last piece, and then we'll call it a day, although there's a lot more to say here. Mamish, a lot more to say. One last piece. Beautiful, beautiful piece he has here, especially for a Rebbe, but also for a parent. So the people, right, I said before the people came to Moshe, right? That was a mistake. Obviously, they came to Aaron, right? They came to Aaron saying, build us an Egel. Now, so the people came to Aaron and they said, make us a God who will come before us because Moshe's not around. What does Aaron say? Vayomer Elihem Aaron. And Aaron said to them softly, okay, take the gold and earrings that are in your wives' ears and your sons and your daughters and bring them to me. In other words, Aaron didn't, you know, Aaron could have said, what? You want to make an angel azav? Get out of here. That wasn't Aaron's approach. Rav Soloveitchik says, we see from this that we see the contrast between Moshe Rabbeinu's approach to leadership of the Jewish people and Aaron's approach. Says Rav Soloveitchik, we may note Moshe and Aaron's different reactions to the golden calf, to the Egel Azav incident. Moshe Rabbeinu denouncing, exhorting, and enlightening. And Aaron working along with the people, procrastinating, hoping against hope to defuse the frightened and confused masses in time for Moshe's return. Both approaches must somehow be combined. The people must not only be taught by instruction, but also by warm and friendly guidance. The king teacher represented by Moshe practices Midas Hadin, criticizing, exhorting, holding people accountable for transgressions and failures. And certainly all parenting and being a Rebbe also include some of this. The Amarits, the ignoramus, and the lax are censured. Emes, truth, demands unbending justice. In the eyes of the Ish Emes, the man of truth, nothing must be given gratuitously. One must be rewarded according to one's merits. If a person is deserving, he should be loved. If he is undeserving, love should be denied to him. Any deviation is unpardonable. The sinner is deserving only of reprimand and instruction. That's Moshe. The saint teacher. So the king teacher is Moshe. He's the Talmud Chacham. The tzaddik, the saint teacher, is represented by Aaron. He is guided by chesed, limitless compassion and overflow flowing kindness. The essence of chesed expresses itself in its universality and its ultimate love, from which no one is excluded. The ish chesed, the person of unqualified love, does not ask the recipient of his love to present moral credentials. His love is gratuitous as well as boundless. While the king teacher rebukes the sinner in harsh language, the saint teacher sheds a tear of sympathy. The king teacher loudly scorns iniquity, while the saint teacher, saddened by iniquity, speaks softly. The former fights for emes through exhortation and instruction, the latter by reproaching the sinner the way a loving mother reproaches a mischievous child. The sermon of the king teacher is often harsh, saturated with prophetic indignation. The sermon of the saint teacher is subdued, saturated with prophetic love. He teaches through love and concern. Moshe was a model of the Rav, Aaron of the Rebbe. Moshe was a kvad peh, a nonverbal person, not given to small talk, easy socializing, and extensive negotiations. He was a Rabbeinu, a scholar, teacher, uniquely spiritually endowed, who communicated tersely what he had to say. He was a teacher primarily to Yeshua, the Zakenim, and to others who were qualified to understand the intricacies of Torah and Halacha. The contrast between Moshe and Aaron was noted by the Medrash Tanchuma. Chesed and Shalom, this is Aaron. Emes and Tzedek, says the Medrash, this is Moshe. And I think it's very important in parenting and in running a school, in teaching, that you need both. You need Yikov Adin Sahar. There needs to be structure. There needs to be clear instruction. There needs to be censure when someone doesn't do the right thing. But you also need the overabundance of love. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. You really need you really need both of them. Okay. We will stop here. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to wish everyone a safe and successful, enjoyable, and inspiring Shabbos. Have a great Shabbos.